This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show number 56. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath in Australia. Coming up in the show, we have a chat with the King of Batting, Gary Palmer. We also have a chat with Manu Gazendam. And as usual, we answer a question from you this week. Well, David, it's been sweltering hot here in Sydney this week. And if you remember from last week, we had our second innings of our game this week. We all went in really confident. We thought if we play to our potential, we'll have a great chance. And everything went to script for the first 2 hours. Mm-hmm. We tried to bat really aggressively, try and get quick runs on the board. And in the end, we got about 167 from about two and a half hours. So we had to bowl them out for... They had a lead of 17 runs. So we had to bowl them out for 150 mm-hmm. in 2.5 hours, or they'd get 150 in 2.5 hours. Right. And we started really well as well. I got a wicket on my first ball of my spell, which was opening, and we got a run out of that same over as well. So they were about 1 for 2, and you can just see all their heads drop in the stands sitting there, and we were all really confident. Mm-hmm. And then one of their batsmen came out, and he basically took the game away from us. I mean, he played really smart. He blocked out his basically his first few overs. He got his eye in, and then he just unleashed on everyone. He saw the first, because they knew their threat was seeing the new ball out, because it was really swinging everywhere. Mm-hmm. And once they saw that out, they just took the game away from us. And I don't know how we lost it, but we did lose it. We gave her 150 runs from 2.5 hours, the same way they did it. But it was really tight at the end, because we either needed two wickets to win.
Yeah.
In the last minute, or they needed 2 runs to win in the last minute before time was called.
Oh, right.
But they got those 2 runs and they got the full 10 points, which in the end they probably deserved it because we didn't play to our potential.
Oh, that's a shame, that is, because you had great hopes, didn't you, for pulling that one back around, and it sounds like you batted all right to do it.
Yeah, it could have gone either way. I mean, if we dropped a lot of chances as well in the field. There was about 2 or 3 drop catches early in the innings of the batsmen who took the game away from us. And I think whoever dropped the catches did put their hand up and say, catches win matches, and I dropped them. So it's partly my fault as well. But we can't really blame the drop catches. We did have some loose bowling as well, but we didn't hold on to our chances. So that's something going forward.
I think that's probably... Anyone who's played club cricket for any amount of time will be listening to this and thinking, I must hear that all the time. You know, we didn't take our catches. If we'd have taken our catches, we'd have won that game. Yeah. And it's a very strange thing that it's so important, and it happens so often that you get important drop catches. Yeah, certainly in my experience, catching practice is the last thing on anybody's mind when it comes to training. You know, I think people would rather do fitness training than catching practice.
Yeah.
it just seems to be one of those things that goes by the wayside very, very quickly and easily. Yet you can always see whenever we do catching practice, I've seen this in my teams I've played for over the years, whenever you do catching practice over a concerted period, even if it's only maybe, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, you know, just do it regularly. Then the standards go up straight away. You know, it's one of those things that you can see an almost immediate effect.
Yeah.
The difference is even just doing some catching practice in the warm up before the start of the day's play makes a difference I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people just have that little edge more of confidence to think, well, I've caught a load in practice, so I'll be all right in the middle. And then they don't worry about it as the ball's dropping down with snow on it.
Yeah.
How do you do much catching practice, Kev, as a team?
Yeah, we usually do in our training, but this game I noticed we didn't do as much close catching. We did a lot of long catching because I don't think we had as much time in between the changeover as well, and maybe we thought that was more important. But all the catches we dropped were close catching catches. Oh, so maybe really? That goes to show that maybe we need to practice both types, or maybe have the slips fielders practice one type and the fielders who usually ride the boundaries and mid on, mid off, try another type. Would you recommend something like that, David?
What we do in our practices, what I sort of tried to implement in a stealthy way with our practices, is we get someone with a tennis racket and a tennis ball, and we get the guys who would be standing in the slips. Although that sometimes that morphs into the entire team for some reason, but you know that's one of those things. But you get the guys who would be standing in the slips, and you just get them to you get someone to whack a tennis ball at you a few times. And just that, just the act of doing that before play starts. I've said about this before with wicketkeeping, but it's exactly the same with slip catching. It just gives you that little edge of confidence because you know that the tennis ball is a lot harder to catch than a cricket ball. And B, it's probably going to be coming faster. The tennis ball is probably coming faster than the cricket ball ever will. You kind of get you overcompensating, if you like.
And you've suddenly got
guys who are taking catches in the slips, and it makes a big difference. You know, last season, my team, we hardly dropped any catches in the slips. And only sort of really difficult ones. But any of the easy ones, any of the ones that go straight to hand, they just sort of nestle in. You know, like you see on the telly, it just sort of nestles into the hands and you think, lovely. Well, I'm sure that's a direct result of having soft hands and, you know, the confidence of catching a tennis ball. So even something as simple as that, even 5 minutes with a tennis ball, and it could make a big difference.
Well, David, one good thing we've learned from this is that we've had too many close games so far, and that our captain was saying this is a good reality check for us to show that we aren't ahead of the pack. We're with the pack, if not even lower at times.
Yeah.
So if we need to win it, we really have to be at the top of our game, which was a good thing in a way. So it helps us to sort of train harder and look at our faults more.
Okay, so you're going to be a bit more motivated for the next training and then a bit more motivated for the next game to try and turn it around.
Yeah, and it sort of revs us up more for when we play these top teams again, because we have the team coming bottom in our next game, and then we have a bye coming up. But after the Christmas break, we have all the top three teams coming up, and it revs us up to sort of try and be at our best when we play them, so we show that we're not just easy beats, or we're not just lucky, but we really are a good team.
Oh, good, yeah. I think a lot of it is psychological. You know, you've got to keep going. You've got to think to yourself, you know, we are good enough to beat anyone on our day, and back yourself to be able to do that. That's an important part of it, because I think a lot of it is, you know, you get teams who are weaker and you can't do anything about it. But when you've got teams who are somewhere equal to each other, then even if one team is stronger, then you'd still back the team who have the increased confidence compared to the team who don't believe that they can win. There's a big psychological factor in cricket, definitely.
Well, David, Pittsvision Academy has been improving, and it's been improving for a long time now. And there's a new course coming out. Can you tell us a bit more about it, David?
Yeah, well, it's out now. It's we announced it at the start of the week. It's Andrew Caddick, who, if you're not familiar with him, he is a former England fast bowler who was, up until the end of the 2009 season in the UK, playing for Somerset, but he's completely retired now. And he spent some time with us and put together a course on fast bowling, swing bowling, seam bowling, bowling fast, bowling accurately, the things that he did very well over a long period. And this is a guy who took a heck of a lot of wickets at test level. He took a lot of one-day international wickets, and he once took over 100 wickets in a season, first-class wickets in a season for Somerset. So when it comes to taking wickets and bowling accurately, and his stock in trade was always the sort of Glenn McGrath-style bowling, metronomic bowling with accuracy and wearing the batsman down. So if you're that kind of bowler, bit of swing, bit of seam movement, that kind of thing, then this course is ideal for you. And if you coach those type of bowlers, then this course is ideal. So it's really exciting. We've produced a lot of videos, produced some worksheets, some interactive stuff. So it really has got something for everyone if you're involved at either bowling or coaching bowling at any level.
I think it's great, David. I mean, Andrew Caddick, he's not just an old player, is he? Isn't he? He's played against some of the current players as well, and he really knows what he's talking about. He'll have a mix of knowledge from sort of the times 10 years back to the times now, because he's still been playing cricket and playing with the international players nowadays as well, so he'll really know what he's talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he's only just retired, so you know, he was even if you think back to 2005 Ashes, he was the he's one of the leading wicket takers in the 2005 season, and then when Simon Jones got injured, he was one of the people that they were talking about seriously to come in to play in this one off Ashes decider in 2005.
Yeah.
So even then, you know, just a few years ago, he was still at the top of his game and you know, potentially an England player, and probably his age was against him even back then. But he was certainly a top first class bowler even then. And in 2009, he had quite a few injuries, didn't play much, but he was still taking wickets regularly on one of the flattest, most bowler unfriendly tracks in the whole country at Taunton.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would regularly take a bunch of wickets. You know, to take 100 wickets in a season, in an English season, in first class cricket ever is a heck of an achievement nowadays. And to do it when you play half of your matches at Taunton is superhuman. So yeah. If you can learn from anyone, then it's you can certainly learn from Caddick. And it's not only technique, this course. It also covers the psychological side and, you know, what to do when you're struggling for form and you don't know how to get out of it. And there's all different drills you can do. And he also talks about what it was like bowling to Brian Lara when he got the 375, the world record at the time, and what that was like, and how you bounce back from something like that when, you know, four bowlers, you're one of a quartet of bowlers who are just getting creamed all around the park for a test match. So that was interesting as well. So definitely some really interesting stuff. So if you're interested in that, then either as a bowler or as a coach, then have a look at it. It's a really good course. If you go to pitchvision.com/academy and look in the courses section, it'll be in there, and you get a full contents breakdown, and you can buy a copy and get instant access to all the videos.
Perfect, David. Well, from one coach to another coach, we have, again, our batting coach, Gary Palmer, and we're back again to pick the brains of him. Now, Gary Palmer has been a first-class cricketer, and he's played for Somerset, and he now helps young players in the game with CCM Academy. So if you want to find out more about Gary Palmer, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer.
Hi, Gary. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Yes, good, thanks. This week, do you have any drills, hints or tips about making your top hand more dominant?
Good thing to hear someone talk about top hand being dominant. You hear a lot of people talk about, oh, 2020 cricket, you've got to bring your bottom hand in. Yes, maybe you do, but I think if you want to be a decent cricket coach or to be able to play really well, any straight batted shots, you need to be thinking top hand, top hand, top hand. The minute you start thinking about bringing the bottom hand in a bit, you know, the left elbow goes if you're a right-handed batsman or woman, and you end up hitting across and around the ball. Good practices are a nice bobble feed, so it bobbles a couple of times, the ball's low, which gets your head over the ball, and just stand there and pick up with the top hand and hit the ball straight back down towards the bowler between mid-on and mid-off. But when you do it, start with the bat on your toe and pick it up, so you get a nice rhythmical swing in it, into the shot. What you see some kids do is they've all got heavy bats, or most of them have heavy bats. They'll stand with it already up, so they've been holding it for a while and their arm's aching, and they step, and the bat just falls into the shot. It needs to get that nice rhythmical up, a bit like a golfer, and into the shot, and then stay along the line of the ball for as long as possible. And if they imagine they've got a paintbrush on the bottom of the bat, and they've hit the ball straight, and they're drawing a line on the floor following where they want to hit the ball, that can be helpful. And then another good practice is to do sort of an underarm feed, one bounce where you hit one with your top hand to get the feel of it, and then the second one you hit with both hands, but you're making a conscious effort to just hold the bat with the fingers and thumb in a loose grip, like a hinge grip. So one with one hand, so if you feel top hand's dominant, one with two hands, making a conscious effort to make that bottom hand loose, and just keep doing it. Top hand, two hands, top hand, two hands, and then go into two hands all the time. I'm not a great fan of the one-handed bottom hand drive-in, because I think that's 60-70% of a lot of young players' problem is that their bottom hand is too strong and it comes in. So trying to highlight doing something with that bottom hand, I find totally counterproductive. I think that that bottom hand needs to be forgotten about, really loose, and it should all be top hand drills. Why would you want to familiarise yourself with just that bottom hand hitting through the ball? Because it really limits your reach. You get too squared up. And really the most important thing on hitting straight is to be able to keep that back going through the line of the ball for as long as you can. And to do that, that leading elbow needs to be bent and in line with the ball. So when you hit it, the forearm, the hand and the bat handle should be in the perpendicular line. So I think it's going straight.
Thank you, Gary, for your time. If you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his work with CCM Academy, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. We now have our interview with Menno Gazendam. Menno has authored an ebook that consists of 120 pages of tips and tricks for spinners. So if you're a spinner or a coach for spinners, then Spin Bowling Tips is the most comprehensive guide to spin bowling out there. So please go to www.pitchvision.com/academy to pick up a copy. Let's have a listen to what Menno has to say for us this week.
Let's shift the subject slightly onto something which no spinner likes to hear about. The weather's a bit wet and horrible, and the ball's got wet, and the captain tosses you the ball and says, "There you go," and you catch it, and it's like a bar of soap. What do you do?
Well, there's not much you can do. I very rarely had this problem playing in South Africa because we've got sunny weather. So most of my cricket has always been in a nice, dry circumstances where I could grip the ball nicely. In fact, the league I play in is a real dust bowl and it's dry pitches. Very nice for spinners. I can rough my hand on the pitch and the ball becomes nice and hard and dry. Perfect. Well, when I went to the UK for 2 seasons, I started realizing this would be not just the odd game, but quite a few games playing in misty and overcast and wet circumstances. And what I quickly learned to do is not to focus so much on actually spinning the ball. There's just nothing you can do. The ball is wet. You can't spin it that much. So I'm focused more on my line and length and the variation of pace. So I really try and deceive the batsman with variations in flight, see if I toss it up higher, to throw it in quicker, and I mixed it up more than I would usually do to make up for the fact that I don't have the spin variations on me. And also, you need to take responsibility. And you're the spinner, no one really cares about you, so make sure that you have a dry towel that you take on with you to the field, maybe take an extra one and keep it with the umpire. Dry the ball before every ball you bowl. Maybe hand out a few to teammates and encourage them to dry the ball every time you get the ball. Don't have your teammates throw the ball back to you and have it hit the ground all the time and from wetting it and making it soggy. So really encourage him to keep the ball in the air, keep it dry. Every time you throw a ball, dry the ball off. Take the responsibility on you. Make sure you've got some towels in your bag when you go to a game. Like I said, no one else is going to do it because they don't worry about the spin bowler. So make sure you have it with you, and then focus when you bowl on your line length and your flight and not so much about the spin.
Thank you, Menno, for your time. If you're a spinner or a coach of spinners, please visit www.pitchvision.com/academy to get the most comprehensive guide to spin bowling out there. Well, we discussed earlier in the show the course released earlier this week with Andy Caddick. Now, Andy Caddick was an English and Somerset fast bowler, and he's taken over 300 international wickets. And he's helped develop the new course called Consistency and Rhythm. In this course, we delve into the mind of one of the best swing bowlers in the last 10 years. Let's have a listen to a part of the course.
Right, so we've worked our run-up. We've worked our angle of attack to the crease. Now I'm going to work on the last phase, which is the most important phase, which is your bowling action phase. Everything we've talked about now is getting from the started a run-up to this point here. From this point is the most important part of the run of the action, and that is using all that momentum you've built, using the rhythm you've got to here, to drive you through the crease. And you drive yourself through the crease because you've got the rhythm to this point to get you up. And the most important thing now is from this point here, your takeoff point, is that you do actually take off. So remember, all the energy we've built up in the run-up to this point, we must make sure we use that energy to drive us off the ground. So what we're looking to do, we're looking to drive up and forward. And as we're driving ourselves forward, we're holding our position. Most importantly, we're holding our position. When we go back to the action, when we talk about the action, the most important bit is the cock position. You must allow your body to get to a position where it can release the ball, where all that energy is stored. A lot of bowlers just tend to run through the crease. The reason they don't bowl quickly is because all they're using is the pace of them running to bowl the ball. What we're trying to achieve, we're trying to achieve all the energy you've built up through the action to get to a point where we can actually release the ball from a cock position. So we've got ourselves into a cock position. The reason we've got ourselves into a cock position, we've taken a big jump from a takeoff stride. We got up, and the one thing that I'll say to you, the one thing that is the most important bit at this position, while you're in a cock position, the one thing that is working for you is a force called gravity. Now, we all know what gravity is. Gravity is a wonderful thing to get you in the right position to bowl the ball. The higher you get, the more likely gravity is going to help you out. So what we're looking to do, we're looking to get up, we're looking to get ourselves into a cock position, at which place we have actually stopped in the action. You may not think so, but we have actually stopped in time in the action. The reason was, as I said before, we've primed ourselves, we're ready to release. At the same time, as I said, we're nice and high, we're nice and tall at the crease, we're coming down into the action now, so when we're hitting the crease, everything is in a straight line. We're looking to get everything straight. The reason we're trying to get everything straight is we're trying to minimalize waywardness bowling. And the only reason we get away with that is by keeping everything straight. The most important bowling part of your body is your left arm. So when you sit there thinking you've got to bowl a ball and you bowl it with your right hand, the ball in your hand, it's not the case. The most important arm in your body is the non-bowling, or should I say, the non-holding arm, which is your left arm. This arm here gives you your pace, it gives you direction, and it gives you your shapes as far as swing, seam. Whatever this does, this will follow. If you stand there and you bowl a ball and your arm comes across yourself, your other arm, your right arm, will naturally follow in that plane. This is why I'm saying, if you're nice and tall, you're coming down with your front arm nice and tall and straight, your right arm will come down nice and straight as well. So what we're trying to achieve is a position where we're nice and tall, we're over the top, we're using all the power in our left arm to bring through the ball in our right. And the reason we're saying pull the power in the left arm is because what power you put into your left arm, it will generate the power in your right arm. So remember, we need to keep it straight, we need to be tall, we do not want to see our arms going across ourselves, because as I said, the ball will naturally follow that plan. If you were to do exactly the same, falling away and pulling in, the ball will naturally follow that plan and go down the leg side. So we're looking to keep everything straight so that when we come to the crease, we hit the crease hard, high, and that actually helps us with our follow through. We actually drive over the top to come through with your follow through.
The rest of this course is available at www.pitchvision.com/academy. Welcome to the listeners' question section for this week. Well, David, this question we have is really applicable to me if you've been reading my Facebook status updates.
Yeah, always.
Well, his name is Laksh, David, and he says he lives in Auckland, New Zealand. And he says, I'm 15 years old and I play in the under-18 Premier team. I'm also overweight, so can you give me a diet chart of what I should eat and when? Also, please provide the exercises I should use to lose weight and be fit for cricket. I want to be a professional cricketer and I need to improve myself. I need the perseverance and determination to become one. I will deeply appreciate if you could help me through. Now, David, similar situation with me as well. I'm not overweight yet, but I think I'm on the way there with my eating habits and lack of exercise at the moment. So what would you recommend for Lax, David?
Probably a lot of people are thinking about it. Maybe not exactly at this time of the year, because, you know, this time of the year, you may be looking towards Christmas and thinking, well, you know, I'll get started in the new year, perhaps. But, you know, why not start now? There's no reason to wait until the new year. You can start now. You can, you know, have a little break at Christmas and then start again afterwards. But anyway, we have talked about it quite a lot on previous shows. The one probably that I would point out if you want to sort of get a real in-depth idea of what you need to do is show number 27, where I interviewed the fat loss troubleshooter, Lee Peel. So have a listen to that and see if there's any tips in there that you can pick up. The other thing I would say is very strongly recommend is Precision Nutrition by Dr. John Berardi. I'll put a link to that, his stuff, in the show notes. That is a really sort of comprehensive guide to, well, pretty much anything to do with nutrition. Yeah. So if you want to lose weight, that's great. If you want to put on muscle, that's great. If you want to get stronger, that's great. It's, you know, he talks you through all the nutritional things that you need to do to get that right.
Yeah.
Now, I talk about those two specific things because what's been asked for is just the answer. You know, give me a diet chart, give me the list of exercises. But unfortunately, it's not that easy. It would be nice if it was that easy, but unfortunately it's not. You can't do a diet and an exercise chart for someone just randomly over the internet because we don't know enough about the basics. We don't know what he's eating now. We don't know what foods he likes and dislikes. We don't know what training he's doing now. We don't know what equipment he's got access to. So we can only sort of talk in general terms. So let's talk in general terms and refer anyone who's listened to this who's thinking about weight loss or anything related to nutrition to have a look at Precision Nutrition, because that really is an excellent product. It's the best one out there. It's not one of these fad diet books. You know, it's a complete system and it'll see you for the rest of your life. So, but let's talk about some general guidelines as well, just to give you a feel for what I mean. The first and most important thing is that you need to be consuming less calories than you're burning off. There's no way around that. You know, it doesn't matter what diet system you use, you know, there's loads of different ways out there, but the energy balance has to work out that you burn more than you consume. As long as you do that, you'll lose weight. Just on top of that, what generally speaking, the problem with most people who have a Western diet is they probably eat too many carbohydrates, starchy carbohydrates, things like rice, pasta, potatoes, things like that. Now, I'm not saying carbs are bad. Don't get me wrong on that, because I wouldn't say that. But if you're picking things to cut out, I would say cut back on the starchy carbohydrates, cut back on the rice, cut back on the pasta, cut back on the potatoes, and then concentrate on getting your carbohydrates from fruit and vegetables, fresh fruit and vegetables. Because they're much lower in calories. So just for those two reasons, if you kind of swap them around, if you swap starchy carbs for carbs from fruit and vegetables, then you'll be golden just doing that. But don't get me wrong. I'm not saying don't eat carbs. I'm not saying going on an Atkins style diet or anything like that. It's just that that's one of the simplest ways that you can cut down on calories. Increasing activity is a big one, of course. You want, ideally, the best form of activity you want to engage in, whether you're aiming to lose weight or improve your performance on the cricket pitch, or indeed both, is, or just look a little bit better, you know, make the guns look a little bit better, is weight training. Because, yeah. You know, weight training will increase your muscle mass, it'll make you stronger, it will improve your metabolism, and the better your metabolism, the more fat that you'll lose. So great. But you don't have to do weight training. I would recommend it for most people, the vast majority of people. But you don't have to do it, of course. You know, you can do, you can play another sport. You can do run on the treadmill if you want to. I mean, again, I wouldn't, that probably wouldn't be my first recommendation. But if that's what you enjoy, knock yourself out. Interval training, you can do, you know, you can go to classes, aerobic classes or circuit training classes. Even this thing called NEPA. Have you heard of that, Kev? NEPA?
No, I haven't heard of it. What is it,
though? Non-exercise physical activity. It just means doing stuff that isn't an exercise. So, you know, you're not going for a jog or you're not going to the gym, yeah. But you're just doing stuff that keeps you active, but you're not, it doesn't sort of count as exercise, if you like. So that would be things like, you know, taking the dog for a walk, playing with your kids, yeah. Anything that gets you up and moving and walking around and doing stuff. So in getting a little bit of a sweat on, that's even that, if you do enough of that, even that builds up, or any combination of those. So, you know, just try and get up the amount of activity, increase the, because the more activity you do, the more calories you burn, the more calories you burn, the more likely you are to get that energy balance going the right way. Yeah. The other thing is the psychological side, which is what makes it very hard just to make some recommendations over the internet, because we don't know psychologically how someone will respond. If someone's got a terrible diet, and you suddenly change their diet to the perfect diet, they might get fed up of it in a week and just go back to the terrible diet again. So psychologically, it's a lot harder. You can't just say, right, I'm changing my diet, I'm going to be healthy now. You know, it takes a bit more than that. So there's a couple of little things you can do psychologically. You can measure what's happening regularly. So keep a record of what you eat, measure how much you weigh, and see, keep a record of how much activity you're doing and see if your weight is dropping. If your weight is dropping, then whatever you're doing is working, carry on. If it's not dropping, maybe it's not working, so maybe you have to have a rethink. Weighing yourself probably isn't the perfect way to keep track, because of course if you're weight training, then you're putting on muscle. If you're putting on muscle, then you may not be losing weight. You may be losing fat, gaining muscle, but your weight is staying the same. Or maybe even going up slightly. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, this isn't working. Whereas really, it is working, but you're getting leaner all the time. So what it might be worth doing is maybe taking photos of yourself once a week. So you can see the changes in your body. You can actually see the changes in your body composition, or maybe getting your body fat percentage done. If you go to a gym, they'll can do a body fat percentage for you. If you know, you have to be careful with that, because it's not always the most accurate, but it's just another way of testing. So find something that works for you and just measure it all the time. The more measuring you can do, the better, as long as it doesn't become a bind.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, expect it to be hard work. There's no magic pill. There's no sort of easy way to do it. If you want to lose weight, it starts quite easy, and you know you get quite highly motivated because you start losing weight quite quickly, and then it always starts to bottom out as your body sort of fights against weight loss, because what you're doing is you're starving yourself, physiologically speaking. You know, if you're burning more calories than you're eating, then your body eventually will say, hang on a minute, I don't want to die, and it compensates and it makes it harder, and psychologically it becomes harder than if you so expect it to be hard work, and don't give up, you know, the first week that you put on a pound, or you know, you don't lose any weight or whatever. Keep plugging away. Do the stuff that you know is healthy and is scientifically proven, and that's where I go back to the precision nutrition, because it's all scientifically proven, and keep plugging away and do the right thing, and don't get disheartened if it doesn't go your way. Approach it as a sort of experiment on your own body, if you like, and keep experimenting and find what works, and keep changing things until you find what works. So those are my sort of quick tips for it. But really, if you want to do it properly, you have to look at not only the physiological side of it and the how it works, you also need to look at the what you're going to eat and what you think you can eat, and also the psychological side, i.e. how long you can keep it up. And sort of, you need some little psychological tricks to keep yourself going.
Sound advice, David. You can get more tips and tricks on our website. I know David has a whole fitness section on the website on www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. Stay tuned for our next show on the 27th of November. If you want to get into touch with us, you can email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. It's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So signing off from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampat.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.